We are joined right now by a national baseball writer for the New York Times. He's the author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. That book is out right now. Tyler Kepner is my guest. Tyler, great to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. It's a really interesting book. Now, let me argue first, Tyler, that the book's origins, you know, it has origins in your time growing up as a Phillies fan, watching Steve Carlton, which I'll get to in a second. But to prove just how legit a Phillies fan that you were back in the day, you and your mom were big Luis Aguayo fans. What was it about his game that you liked so much?
He used to come up big in the clutch, my mom always felt. She was like, you know, he was a guy you could rely on off the bench. He was a little guy. It looked like he was always getting the most out of his ability. You could play him all over the place. And it was kind of like a surprise if he was in the lineup. You know, you'd look and you'd say, oh, wow, it's Luis Aguayo today. You know, what's he going to do out there? But so, yeah, and he signed the autographs for my mom. To Mimi, love always Luis Aguayo. So I always appreciated that.
It's a great story. I love it. Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, so Philadelphia obviously made the big move of the offseason when they brought in Bryce Harper. It's only 9 games, but he's hitting .345. He's got 3 home runs. He's a top tenner in numerous categories. The season's barely started, but knowing that city and that fan base, what do you make of the start that Harper's gotten off to? And how important is it for him and for them?
Yeah, he has hit all the right notes with that town. You know, no prior connection really to Philadelphia. Got a lot of money, but he has completely embraced everything that city loves. I do know that his love of sports and sports history and the kind of passion that Philadelphia has, that is genuine. You could talk to him early in his career about some of his sports heroes, guys who we never even saw play, like Pete Rose and George Brett. You know, that kind of ethos is within him. But just, you know, even small details like the Philly Fanatic cleats that one day, or meeting up with Allen Iverson, taking Carson Wentz to a Sixers game, and little things like not taking his number 34 to Philadelphia. You know, it was Roy Halladay's number, showing respect for Halladay, who of course is still so beloved in Philadelphia. There, he is hitting all the right notes, man, with that town. They just want you to love him. And he seems to really love those fans there. It couldn't be off to a better start.
Tyler Kepner joins us. All right, so the book, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches, is structured by devoting one chapter to each pitch and then talking to the pitchers who mastered it. This is where Steve Carlton comes back in, because you spoke with him about the slider. A lot of people know he's got a reputation for being not one of the chattiest guys in the media. So how was that conversation, and what did you learn?
Yeah, he didn't talk to the press anybody for years and years with the Phillies, I was able to get a line into him and kind of let him know I wanted to tell the history of the slider and couldn't really do it without him, and we talked for a long time. I mean, he learned from watching Bob Gibson when he was a young pitcher on the Cardinals how effective that pitch could be, but Gibson was always pitching through pain and Carlton didn't want to have to deal with pain, so he became just a workout fanatic that carried him to a really long career. But he first started throwing it in earnest in a Goodwill tour over in Japan, where he was facing Sadahara Oh, the great Japanese home run slugger. And Carlton was just sort of expecting these guys to, you know, kind of go through the motions and just, play patty cake up there, as he told me. And then Sadahara Oh is hitting home runs off him. And he says, well, geez, I got to do something new to this guy. So he threw that slider, he aimed it right at his ribs, and O went flying back, and the pitch went slicing over the plate for a strike, and he thought, I might have something here. And, of course, he went on to be the first pitcher with 4 Cy Youngs and went to the Hall of Fame.
All right, so what about his slider? What made it so special, and have you ever seen one that would compare?
Yeah, it had that, what they would call the two-plane break. Like, he had the high fastball, and then he had the slider that would just slice, you know, in that diagonal across the plate there, too late for hitters to commit. I mean, you know, you see, that's why the slider is so hard, because it looks like the fastball for the longest. You want a really, really little bitty dot on it, almost an imperceptible dot. If you get a big one, then it starts spinning like a cement mixer, and guys know that they can telegraph it. But Carlton's, he couldn't really telegraph until it was too late. Like Willie Stargell said, like trying to drink coffee with a fork.
Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, so as long as we're talking about sliders and Philadelphia pitchers, you also talked to Brad Lidge, who used the slider in a couple of legendary moments with two completely different results. What did he tell you about the slider they threw to Albert Pujols in the 05 NLCS?
Well, that was what was so interesting about that. We have those two really memorable moments with the same pitch, and he said he had thrown a good one to Pujols earlier, and he tried to throw it even better. Like he just sort of tried to get out of his get out of that comfort zone and try to make it even nastier than it needed to be. And he just overdid it. His mechanics got, you know, out of whack, and he just left it right there in the middle, and Pujols obliterated it. And then the moment comes in the 2008 World Series, man on second, a one-run game. Eric Hinsky comes up to the plate, and Hinsky had hit a fastball for a home run in the previous game. He had hit a fastball off Lidge off the wall the first time they ever encountered each other a few years earlier. So he was just going to go all sliders right there, and he struck him out on three pitches. Lidge had a slider that it could really break one of three ways, and it didn't have any kind of dot at all. And so hitters had no idea what was coming until it was too late. And even if they knew, they didn't know if it was going to break straight down or this way or that way. So, you know, and that's just one of those things, man. Like a guy like Brad Lidge, he's a first-round pick, but he didn't even throw the slider until he was already in the pro ball. You know, and that's the pitch that made him a star and made him a World Series champion. And he didn't even have it when he got in. And that's what I wanted to get into in the book, is how these guys learned their best pitches and just sort of the endless kind of creativity and innovation that comes with being a pitcher. If you're perceptive enough and open-minded enough to learn from teammates or coaches or just try anything, you might unlock a pitch that takes you to the Hall of Fame.
This book is called K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. It's out right now. The author is Tyler Kepner. It's really an amazing read. Tyler, what about the fastball? Obviously, that's a different beast because there are a number of guys who had great, great fastballs. Who did you speak to about that, and what made their fastballs great?
Well, Nolan Ryan, I talked to him for sure. Bob Gibson, J.R. Richard, who I also talked to about the slider, and he was just a fascinating guy to me. You know, his career cut short at age 30 with a stroke in 1980, right after starting the All-Star game. But he had a fastball and a fastball slider combination that, you know, he is still held in such reverence by guys who didn't even strike out. Dusty Baker, you know, never struck out, but he struck out a ton against this guy. He was as revered and feared in his day as probably Randy Johnson was in his, or Sandy Koufax was in his. And I try to get back to the beginnings of the fastball from, you know, who threw it the best early, Walter Johnson, Bob Feller. And that was, that's the pitch, you know, everybody's got to have a fastball. But more than that, more than just the velocity, I wanted to get into guys who just believe in their fastball so much, even if it's not a super, you know, supercharged kind of radar gun pitch. Like Madison Bumgarner, I talked to him about the last out of the 14 World Series where he's facing Sal Perez, right? And a home run wins the World Series for Kansas City, but an out wins it for San Francisco. And why did he go all fastballs in that at-bat? He climbed the ladder on him. He didn't even try his other pitches. And we got into sort of, you know, some of those moments that we remember as fans, just trying to get inside the heads of these pitchers and why they picked the pitches that they did.
Tyler Kepner joining us, and there's a fascinating section also about knuckleball pitchers, who you refer to as Jedi Knights, because they've got a power that is hard to understand and to control. How do knuckleballers explain the knuckleball, and what's it mean to be a knuckleballer?
Well, every other pitch relies on spin, right? And the knuckleball, you don't want it to spin at all. You just want it to float and kind of let the air currents take it to wherever it wants to go. It's really frustrating to try to hit. It's really, really hard to try to pitch. You don't see anybody throwing it right now with Stephen Wright suspended at the moment. There's nobody in baseball besides Stephen Wright who throws it. So it's always kind of flirting with extinction, but because it's the one pitch that you can try on your way out the door, I think it's always going to have a place because it's still out there as a possibility. And it's what makes it so fun for fans, too, I think, is you and I anybody can watch a game and see a Aroldis Chapman pitch and think there's no way I could ever in a million years throw 105 miles an hour. But maybe I could throw a knuckleball, you know, like maybe I could figure it out. And it's deceptive in that because it's the hardest pitch to throw, but anybody theoretically can do it.
So knowing all of that, is there a stronger brotherhood in sports than the brotherhood of knuckleballers?
I don't think so, and that was another thing, is that these guys, there's so few people walking the earth who know what it's like to throw a major league knuckleball. Their coaches can't really help them. Their catchers, at best, just roll with it and deal with it. Even the good ones, you know, they get beat up a lot back there. Their managers just need a lot of patience. Terry Francona said, just put your hands on your butt and keep them there because, you know, you just got to you got to trust that these guys have a lot to offer. But the brotherhood is powerful. Steve Sparks, the old knuckleballer for the Angels and Tigers, who now broadcasts for the Astros, was telling me about when he was into retirement, the Yankees, George Steinbrenner, called up his agent and said, "Anything, name your price. I want you to come and throw to our guys and give them some practice with knuckleballs before we face Tim Wakefield in the playoffs." And he's like, "Maybe I could have had $10,000. I could have had a suite at the Ritz or something. But I didn't want to do it because I didn't have a vested interest in that series," this is Steve Sparks saying. But he's like, "I couldn't do that to Tim. I just felt like it would dishonor what we have as knuckleballers for me to take some easy cash from George Steinbrenner to so they could get a better look at scouting Tim Wakefield."
What a freaking Jedi. I love that. See, that's the brotherhood. That is the brotherhood.
Yeah,
this book is called K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches, which is out right now, and there's so much more to it. There's so many different pitches, and guys, we could have gotten into if we had more time. It's called K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. You want to look for that. He's a national baseball writer for the New York Times. Tyler, great conversation. Good luck with that, and it's always good to have you on.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Anytime.
That was fun. Thank you. Tyler Kepner. He would not take the money because he had no vested interest in their success, and he did not want to be disloyal to a fellow knuckleballer. That is such a good story.